Good morning and welcome to another episode of the Real Estate Heavyweights Podcast, an interview edition. I am Ashton Hines. I'm half of the Real Estate Heavyweights. I'm the relative newbie of the group. I've flipped four houses. I've got a long-term hold. I still do some home health, physical therapy, and I'm wading into the waters of social media management and podcast editing for other people. But I also am a real estate agent and I help people buy and sell, and I'm still looking for my next flip. In the process of learning all that about real estate, I have met a wonderful guy, a friend, a guru in my life who teaches me every week little tidbits about how to be a better investor, a better real estate professional, and that is Tavis Westbrook. He has over 200 flips and wholesale deals. He has a commercial building. He's got a bunch of rentals. He's been in this business almost 20 years, I believe. And he's just got a lot to offer. And so we come here every week. Every Friday, we do a DFW market update show, the local news in the real estate world. And we talk something about actual investing. We try to break down one of the aspects of what to do, comping, sourcing, that sort of thing. So we do that every Friday. But we also bring on people in our lives. And fortunately for the both of us, we've been blessed with having a lot of friends and family in the real estate business. We bring them onto this show and we get to talk to them and learn from them. And today is one of those shows that is going to be amazing. I think you're going to take a lot away from this. Today, we have Jordan Bellinger. He is a friend of Tavis's. He's a real estate agent here in the DFW area. He has learned a ton and has so much to offer through tragedy. He had a tragic experience in his life, and we talk a lot about that. And we talk about the things that we can do as human beings, as friends, as coworkers, to help people out as they struggle through life, as we all do. And this is such an applicable episode for so many people. And that's why I'm passionate. If you have never shared an episode, please do that today. I'd love for you to come back every Friday and listen to our show and go back and listen to the other interviews selfishly. But if you don't do it for any other episode, please do this one. Text it to a few friends, because I think so many people could use the information that Jordan is really uniquely capable of sharing. So there you have it. I hope you enjoy it. And here you go, the interview with Jordan Bellinger.
Yeah, so balance is one of those reasons why I got into real estate, which, you know, a lot of people in real estate never get balanced. They're constantly, you know, in a mode of panic. But there are a lot of things that real estate allows you to do that you just couldn't do in a typical, you know, business. And so, for example, right now, everyone's getting their tax protest letter. And so 90% of people have no idea what it means. They look at it, they're like, okay. They don't know the complexity and what they really need to look at. They buy the house 3 years ago, they filed for homestead, and they maybe it got lost, so it's still not on the house. Do they know that they should go back and fight for that and get it put back on the house?
You are now listening to the Real Estate Heavyweights Podcast.
You see this guy here staring back at you? That's your toughest opponent. Every time you get into the ring, that's who you're going against. I believe that in boxing, and I do believe that in life.
Your weekly deep dive into DFW real estate, life, and beyond. With your hosts, Tavis Westbrook and Ashton Hines.
Well, what's up, Jordan? Thanks so much for coming on with us today. And I know you, Tavis, go way, way back. So I'm sure we'll get into some of those stories. But why don't you get started by just kind of catching us up? I know you're in the retail business, the retail real estate game right now. But give us a little bit of a background of kind of got, you know, what got you here today.
So probably about 10 years ago, I worked for the same company since I was 16. And I spent 10 years with them. That began to not be a good fit very quickly. And I had kind of a list of things that I wasn't happy about. And I was like, what can fix all of those things? And my brother was in real estate at the time, and he made it look really easy. So I'm like, he can do it. How hard can it be? So I got into real estate because it fixed a lot of those problems that I didn't like. You know, policies getting in the way of customer service and doing the right thing, inability to, you know, run the business how I felt it should be run, and just being around incompetent people made it difficult to do what I thought was right. And so real estate was that, okay, I have my own business. It's what I make of it. I can work a lot and make a lot of money, or I can work less and make less money. I can spend the time where I think it's valuable with family and friends and whatever. And so I got into real estate and found out it was not as easy as Corey had made it look. And so for the first couple of years, it was rough. And then, but I kept at it, I kept pushing it. And, you know, now it's a sustainable business for me. And that was almost 10 years ago.
Wow.
So
you started it. Did you start with the brokerage you're at now? What were you doing when you were 16? Like, what were your activities?
So my first job was a lifeguard, at a big fitness organization with a big aquatics facility. It was a national brand, like international now. And I didn't want to bag groceries, so I went and got my lifeguard certification. And my mom told me she'd pay for it as long as I could get myself there. So nice. I rode my bike to the local little natatorium thing, got my lifeguard certification, and started applying. And I only applied one place. And she goes, well, if you're going to apply somewhere, apply at the top one first. I'm like, okay. So I applied at the first place and I got it. And I struggled in school. Like, I was average in school. I was average in sports. And at that time, when I was 16, I was like, I'm not really good at anything. Like, I'm average at school. I'm average at sports. Like, what am I going to do? And in high school, like that, you don't really have anything else, at least back then, before social media. And so I got into the working field, and I'm like, very quickly, I was like, oh, I'm good at this. I'm good at working. And I'm like, okay, my life might turn out okay. So, like at the time, I was thinking about going in the military. I certainly wasn't going to get into college. I dabbled a little bit in like the community college, but I had no direction. I had no idea what I was going to do. I had no idea how I was going to be successful. I didn't even think I would be successful at the time when I was in high school until I started working. And at that point, I just started, you know, working harder and getting promoted rapidly. And because I was able to run circles around other people because, you know, I was just willing to do things other people weren't, and work hard consistently. And that worked out really well. I was a 16-year-old supervisor managing people that were in their late teens, early 20s. I was one of the youngest people ever hired for a department head role at that company. Even to this day, probably I was 20, and I was a department head, and my peers were most of them late 20s, early 30s, 40s, and 50s. It was very different. They would be like, oh, we're gonna go out and grab drinks. You want to come? And I was like, I'm 20. I can't join you. But yeah, it worked out. I was a regional manager for them at 23. I think, and I left at 25 or 26 years old and got into real estate. And I was like, man, I've been really successful at this other thing. That's all going to translate to real estate. we all know that's a lie. I mean, some of it does, but we see, you know, successful business people come into real estate all the time, and they're not willing to put in the work. But because of their experience previously, they're like, oh, I'm going to be successful at this. People just naturally come out of the woodwork and hire me, and I'm going to do really well. And some of that stuff translates, but a lot of it does not. Real estate, I think one of the first people, I don't know who it was, but Wayne Salmons, Tavis, I think you know who he is. He said, he's one of the Keller Williams coaches, and he goes, real estate's a contact sport. I'm like, oh. I was like, that makes sense. More contacts you make, you know, the better you're going to do. And so I think it was him that said that.
Yeah. It sounds familiar, but I'm having a hard time remembering exactly who. But yeah, I've heard that a million times, right?
I think he was in a Bold class or something. I think he was the first person that I heard it from. And it rings true more and more. And I tell, you know, newer agents that, you know, it's you will have really bad agents sell way more business than you because they get in contact with more people. Mm-hmm. And so you want to be really good at what you do, but you also need to, you can be the best agent in the world, but if you're not making contacts, if you're not getting in touch with people, then no one cares. Yeah. And we all know agents that sell a ton of business and they're horrible. They're miserable to work with. They never have a repeat client. Once that client works with them, they never use them again. Right. But they sell their, you know, some of those agents are some of the top in the business. And so being an exceptional agent isn't going to fix all your problems.
Right. Right. So Jordan, let's back up a little bit, because you were, you know, you worked for this company, you were successful in that. And I didn't realize you were as young as you were, but I guess it's, you know, I can't believe it's already been 10 years, but your brother, Corey, was how much younger than you are?
2.5 years.
2.5 years. Okay. So he got into the business. How many years in front of you did he jump in?
Probably at least two, maybe more.
Okay. So he, it, he,
I mean, he,
He jumped in. What was he doing before? Like, because, I mean, obviously, you're big brother. You're looking at Corey and knowing a little bit of Corey's background. I mean, a lot of people love Corey. Yeah. We all love Corey. But he yeah. was a little bit of a bull in a china cabinet. And, you know, yeah. would, you know, you talk about hard work and you talk about mindset. I mean, he was not afraid to get in front of people. He didn't know what the hell he was doing half the time, but he had no problem getting in front of somebody and making an impression.
Yeah. I mean, he was a good agent. That's the thing is that he started. So before he got into real estate, he like dabbled in different things. He did, he worked with kids at like a gym. I think he probably worked in a restaurant. He did a bunch of things and he would keep the job for a little bit and then he'd go do something else. And, probably cause he just lost interest or got pissed off at somebody or something like that. And he's like, I'm leaving. This isn't for me. And then I want to say he got into real estate as an ISA for Mike Reese.
Okay. Yeah.
I think that's right. Was his transition into real estate. And I think he was an ISA for a while. And then he was an agent and he obviously learned a lot from his, you know, his programs and stuff. And I think that kind of set him up. And the thing is repetition. If you get in real estate as an ISA and you work that, I mean, just the quantity of conversations you're having, it helps you know what to say and what not to say and what objections people will have and things like that. I tell people this day, I'm like, go to open houses, go to as many open houses as you want, as you can. And you're going to get business. But even if you don't get business, imagine being able to have a real estate conversation with 100 people over the span of a month, if not more, and say some stupid stuff, say some stuff that you shouldn't have said, say some good stuff and figure out what works, figure out what doesn't work. And then when you go to, you have a warm lead, somebody that you know, somebody that sent somebody your way, you have what to say and what not to say a whole lot better than most agents that have been doing it for years. Because some agents will be in the business for two years and they won't have 100 conversations. So
right.
I think the ISA was probably one of those things that helped him, you know, really just figure out stuff. And he was naturally charismatic. He was naturally a salesperson his whole life. You know, he's always trying to sell somebody something, whether it's convincing me to do something I shouldn't do or something else. But that was sales, you know, that was, persuasion. And so, and then I don't know how he transitioned. I don't know if he transitioned into an agent with Reese or if he went somewhere else, but yeah. And then he was an agent. I think he was on a couple teams and then he was just an individual agent. So
yeah, I think that was originally in Frisco, right? And then he ended up coming to our office at DPR at some point. I don't remember.
Yeah. He was at DPR when I got there. That's why I went to DPR.
Gotcha. And then Jordan, so define ISA for people out there that don't know that acronym.
Inside sales agent. So my understanding of them is they're just, you know, are they picking up the phone or are they making calls?
That's a good question. Probably making.
Maybe both. Because there's, and I think real estate probably, you have outside sales agent. I mean, anyways, they're just handling calls or setting up appointments. So their goal was.
They might be taking the inbound calls maybe.
Yeah, more like a buyer's agent type thing where they're coming into the team.
Yeah, I'm thinking it was anyways, they're on the phone. They're not making appointments. They're not I think back then you didn't have to be licensed. And I think it transitioned to be like pretty much every ISA nowadays is licensed. Because there's a fine line between not talking real estate and talking real estate. And if you're not licensed, you're talking real estate, it becomes problematic. And so, but yeah, they're basically just teeing up appointments. So they're setting appointments, they're setting calls, they're setting face-to-face, listing appointments, buyer's appointments, things like that. And so you work through a lot of whether you have PPC, which is pay-per-click like leads, or you have Zillow leads, or you have Boomtown or whatever, those leads come in and you work them. And then once they're warm and they're ready to go for an appointment or a buyer's appointment or a listing appointment, that's when they set them up with like an agent. And so it's, I've never run my business that way, but that from what I see that it takes off a lot from the actual buyer's agent and it allows them to work on, you know, what's more valuable of their time. Is it hammering these leads that 90% of them will turn into nothing, or is it, can you tee them up where you're like, okay, this person's ready for an appointment. This person's ready to sign a buyer rep or a listing agreement kind of thing.
Yeah. And we've talked a lot about the 10,000 hours, you know, Brett Caldwell was on, Scotty Sanders was on. We've talked about some leadership stuff in the 10,000 hours. And I think people who get their start, you know, I've done a lot of open houses, not as many as I had hoped to this year. I set a big goal early on. I faded a little bit, but I've done this year, I think 17. And you're right, doing that volume of just conversations, learning what people are asking about, concerned about, all that stuff. But doing cold calling or inside sales and just handling that volume, there is so much value in that. And I think that if you can get past that part of the business and you can sort of convince yourself, I can go fish. I know how to fish. And this isn't the most fun way to fish, you know, to bring in food, but if I needed to, I could, you know, I can do open houses. I can cold call. I can handle these things. I think when you convince yourself of that, and then you choose to go do the easier parts, that's one thing. A lot of people get into the business, they see the easy stuff, they try it that way. And then when it doesn't work, it's like, well, I'm just not good at this, or this is, I'm not cut out for this, or, you know, people don't like me, whatever it is. But the people who can figure out that side, I feel like have an edge on other people in the business.
Yeah.
Well, especially over the last 5 years, right? Like the last 5 years has made things look really easy out there, right? The last 2 years, not so much, but prior to that, I mean, you know, and really even going back into anything like 2015 and forward, you know, I mean, things have been pretty smooth sailing. So, you know, I think anything that you're putting a lot of time and effort into and you learn, right? I mean, I think like you're saying, it's a matter of, if you're having those conversations over and over again, a lot of it's going to repeat itself and you're going to get better at understanding what it is. You're going to understand keywords. You're going to pick up on people's personalities on, are they ready to do something now? Are they ready to do something later? You know, just following up, you know, providing value. I mean, I think one of the really good things, and Jordan, I've gotten to know you know, a lot better than your brother over the years, but one of the things you do really well is you put out value, right? And you put out value in your content, your video content, and things that you're doing in social media, just pushing the information out there and creating key components that people want to listen to or understand, and diving deep into explaining what it is, even one-sided, right? You're not doing an interview. You're just basically talking about a topic and sharing information. And so I'm sure that goes a long way with your sphere and, you know, connects the dots, right? Because I think I've shared your videos several times just out to my sphere just because you're putting out good information, right?
Yeah, I appreciate that.
So, yeah, absolutely. But, yeah, so let's talk a little bit about, you know, what people don't like to talk about. And, you know, I even thought about bringing Nick Good into this as well, just to kind of talk about, you know, some things that you guys have obviously faced trauma in your life and what you've had to do mindset wise to overcome that and just keeping forward with the glasses half full and kind of overcoming some of these tragedies in your life, right? We talk about real estate, we can talk about jobs all day long, but a lot of it comes down to life, and we're all doing life together. And I think the end goal, you know, as we've talked to people like Scotty and some other people, the big picture is having that full, fulfilled life, right? And it's, we talk about jobs and income here, but, you know, more so we're talking about just having a well-rounded life and being balanced and things like that. So you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so balance is one of those reasons why I got into real estate, which, you know, a lot of people in real estate never get balanced. They're constantly, you know, in a mode of panic. But there are a lot of things that real estate allows you to do that you just couldn't do in a typical, you know, business. And so I got my license in May of 2015, and before the end of the year, I went full time. And in February of 2016, my brother, Corey, he took his life. He was still in real estate. The reason he did that was a lot. I think it was drug related. I think it was, depression related and that kind of thing. But real estate allowed me to cope faster than I would have otherwise. It allowed me to work the clients that I had. I continued to work on many of them, had no idea what I dealt with. And I think that was healthy for me to go out in the world and do things. But it also allowed me to, you know, lay in bed for a full day if I didn't have any appointments. And so if I was at your typical, you know, company, if I didn't run my own business and I didn't have the flexibility to do what I felt was important to me, then it would have taken me far longer to get back on my feet and actually become productive again. And you mentioned Brett Caldwell. He's an incredible person. I remember when it happened, he reached out and he goes, anything you need, let us know. And he listed off like all this stuff that he could do. And what was interesting about that conversation is a lot, like half of the things that he mentioned, that he's like, we can do this, 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 let me know anything you need. When you say anything, you don't think of specific things. And there were a few things that he ended up, you know, doing for our family that were awesome, including Keller Williams TPR and Janice Moore and the team over there. And that supported my family, supported my mom, that really showed that they cared. They cared tremendously about Corey. They cared tremendously about our family. And all of that was something that wouldn't happen in a typical company. And I think years later, a good friend of mine from that previous company I was at, she reached out to me. She goes, you know what? The company wanted me to send you flowers, but they said the budget was $50. She goes, there was no chance I was going to send you $50 flowers. So I felt it was better just not to send you anything. And I said, 100%. And it just, it goes to show, like, and this is a multi-billion dollar company. And, you know, I was like, you know, the support that we got from Brett and Teresa and Janice and all the other people over there that I'm not thinking of off the top of my head was exponentially more when it came to the support that we had. And it was, if I was still at that company, if he took his life 1 year prior, I would have been in that company and I don't know what would have happened to me.
Yeah.
And so that's what real estate does, you know, or it can do. And so I'm incredibly fortunate for that it's just, and then my wife and I grew up together. We were never friends or we never hung out. She was a cheerleader. I was in band. We obviously didn't travel in the same circles, but, if Corey didn't bring the people together that he did and still does, me and my wife would not have been in the same moment at the same place for me to ask her out to coffee. And so, wow. I mean, and you have to look at things like that. You have to look at the positive. You have to look at you have to take things like that and go, okay, there's positive here somewhere. There's growth here somewhere. There's, you know, what is this? And you know, Tavis, you asked if I was okay talking about this, and 100% I am. And I appreciate you asking, but I think it's one of those things a lot of people don't talk about. You know, I see people post more often than I wish about a death of a relatively young person that I assume was healthy, and it says nothing about how they died. And with my background, that's always like that. It's probably suicide. And maybe it is, maybe it isn't. And I don't say that to anyone else about those people, but it's one of those things that when you see that, you know, unexplained death of a 25-year-old, of a 35-year-old, somebody that, you know, seemed to be healthy and productive and things like that, you're like, you know, it's probably another one of those. And a lot of families don't talk about it. From the very beginning, we talked about it. And it's me and my mom that it was up to us to talk about it. And we were both on the same page immediately that this is something that, you know, we need to discuss with people. People need to know it, and they need to know that there's ways to get support. There's a new, I don't know the number, but there's basically a 911 for mental health. It's I can look it up and say it on here while we're at it. But it's basically I think that's for information. I think it's
sorry. Or that's
411s when you dig holes.
Yeah,
311, 611. Man, I don't know. Yeah,
it's one of those.
988. Yeah, 988. And you can text the number as well. But okay. It's 988. Okay. And so it's I don't know when it started. It's relatively recent, but it's basically like a suicide hotline. It's their goal is to get you off that ledge. You can text them, you can call them, and it's one of those things, like those resources are there. And then I think it's educating people with how to talk about it. You know, I think if I knew what I knew now, could I have prevented it? Maybe not, but could I have extended his life? Probably. Hmm. I'm not an expert in any of this, but there's resources out there. If you know somebody that's struggling with that, or you think you might be, there are resources that you can access that will teach you how to talk to those people. Yeah. Like, how do you, you know, if you think somebody's suicidal, asking them if they're suicidal isn't going to make them suicidal. Hmm. Like, that's one of the things that I was like, oh, you know, it's,
yeah,
there's a lot of information about there. And I think if I had that better knowledge, better education on it, it would be something that I would have been willing to talk about and discuss. And maybe, you know, maybe it would have extended things a little bit longer. Maybe it would have prevented it. I don't know. But it's, you know, I don't know.
So Jordan, I want to touch on a few things there. So
yeah,
what are some of the big takeaways? I want to know, you know, obviously talking about suicide and mental health is important. And, you know, are there things, so I want to know, are there things that you would do within an organization and a friend group that you would say, like, these are some good, just kind of general practices on checking in. And, you know, just, these are some things I do now with people, kind of knowing what I know, I try to do it this way. And then I also just kind of want to know, how has this shaped how you interact with people in general and your, you know, your clients? And you're obviously able to connect in a way that you couldn't before. You would never have chosen that skill set, but you can connect now, and maybe how that's shaped. And then I would love to know, you know, specifically from the company standpoint, you know, what are some specific things that people can do for families that are, maybe it's not suicide, maybe just, you know, we just had a friend that's a contractor whose spouse died. And what are some good things that people can do to be supportive in times like that? So I know that's a lot, but, you know, kind of how is it shaped how you interact with people? And then what are some things that people can do? And what are some things that we can do just with our friends around us just to have good kind of general health with friendships and make sure that we're doing our part to make sure everyone's doing okay?
I think when it comes to our friend groups, I think being letting people know that you're human, I think in male friend groups specifically, it can be very macho. It can be very, we don't have feelings. It can be very, you'll never see a Harley outside of a psychiatrist office, but I rode my bike to my therapist for years. So after Corey passed away, because that was part of it for me.
Yeah, you were riding his bike at that point, right? So
yeah, I kept his bike for years, but it was part of my process. Like there's, you know, I was a motorcycle guy for years, and there's always this. I remember reading this, you know, joke, and I thought it was hilarious. Before Corey died, and it said, "You'll never find a motorcycle outside of a, you know, a therapist office or whatever." And mine was outside often, every week for, you know, a year or two. And so I think that, you know, everyone has something going on. If you talk to somebody long enough and they're willing to share and you're willing to open up, you'll find that everyone has demons. Everyone has, you know, struggles. Everyone has something they're dealing with. And every single person, no matter how successful or put together you think they are. And so I think by letting people know, there's the, you know, reciprocity rule. I think that is, like, if I ask Tavis, "Hey, how's the family?" the expectation is Tavis asks me how my family is. And so if I share how my family is, he's probably going to share how his family is. And so I think there's something that you could do with that where you're like, you know, I've really been struggling lately. And honestly, like, real estate's a kick in the rear right now. And it has been for a while. And that's normal. Like, that's, you know, and I've shared that a little bit more than I normally have. And I think even my clients connect to that. They're like, oh, you know, and if there's an agent right now that says they're not working really hard and harder than they have in a while, then they probably have no idea what they're doing. So, because there's no agent right now that's going, "Yeah, oh yeah, it's easy. Yeah, I'm doing really well. This is great." That I know, at least. And so I think there's something to be said for that. Let them know that you're willing to talk about your struggles, and maybe they're willing to talk about theirs, and maybe that leads to something. And you know, I think that I find the people that I'm close with, I've lost two people. I lost Corey and I lost a really good friend of mine, Josh. And when they took their lives, it was not a surprise. And so I think if you have that feeling about somebody, you know, you know, and that's something to think about, you know, that's something to talk about. And like I said earlier, there's a lot of stuff online that I've heard multiple times that if you think somebody is suicidal, asking them if they're suicidal isn't going to put that thought in their head. Like, they're not, and you say it, it's not going to make them think that. It's not going to make them suicidal. And so, and there's a lot of information out there like that. I just don't want to talk about it because I'm not at all an expert. And so, you know, and it you know, that's one of the things, with your friend groups. I think that, having the experience I have with, Corey and Josh and Austin, I think people, and I'm public about it. It's not something I hide. It's something that I typically talk about as those times come up. Sometimes it's a birthday or it's the anniversary of their death or it's something like that. I'll just feel emotional about it and I'll decide that I'm gonna post something. And so it's pretty public that I've experienced those things. And so I do have people reach out to me from time to time, whether it's somebody that's struggling or it's somebody that is, they know somebody struggling. I don't have any answers for them, but I can certainly point them to resources. But I think that's a lot of, you know, a lot of it. And if you have somebody that you know is struggling with that and you know some people in their friend circle and you know some people that maybe they could help, I mean, reach out to them. I mean, worst case, that person's pissed at you because they find out.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know. I mean, I feel I sleep well at night knowing that I did the best I could at the time. And I think that's, for some people, that won't be enough. And I've learned things after that could have helped, but I didn't know those things. So that doesn't really bother me. But it's one of those things that, like, do the best that you can at that time. And maybe I did extend it. Maybe I did extend Josh's life a little bit. Maybe I did extend Corey's life a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah. When I think that right there is a skill set that you can carry forward is just being nice enough to yourself to be able to move on with things, you know, and it's not always as heavy as suicide and death, but even just interacting with people and making mistakes and saying the wrong thing or losing a friend or losing a client that walks away and they want to work with someone else, like being able to sort of back up and say, what responsibility did I have in this? How can I be better? How would I do it differently next time? But not completely dwelling on it forever and ever and beating yourself up, because then that affects your life and everyone else around you. And they didn't ask for that too. And so being able to absorb that and then let it shape how you're moving forward, that's really powerful. That's to me, that's amazing that you can do that. That's great.
Well, and Jordan, and going back to what Ashton asked you earlier, what do you think some of the key things from your friends and spheres that helped you? Obviously, huge network of people, right? And social media has been around for a long time. So it's easy, you know, when you see a social media post, you know, and you see something happen, it's easy to comment or it's easy to like or give a hugs or do an emoji or, you know, hey, we're praying for you. You know, it's easy to, you know, send a message. But what do you think were some key things that people did for you or reached out to you that helped? Because I think we all struggle with that sometimes. Like, we don't know what to do, you know, when somebody loses somebody, right? Just trying to figure out how to acknowledge it, but also, you know, how to truly be there for somebody that, you know, like in your situation. What do you think some of those things were?
So, one of the things that Brett Caldwell said is, he goes, if you need anything, one of the things he said is, if you need food, if you need, you know, if anyone's coming in town, they need a hotel. And I'm like, you know what? My dad's coming in town. Can you talk to him and figure that out? And he goes, absolutely. What else do you need? And so it's kind of like the Chick-fil-A, like, you know, or McDonald's or whoever does it, like, you know, what else? Mm-hmm. What else? It's always a, and that was the giving of bread. It was like, okay, I got it. I'll do that. What else? What else do you need? Okay, I got that. What else? And so And they were all that way. They put together a GoFundMe to help my mom pay for Corey's, you know, service and Corey's cremation and all that stuff. And that was, it was one of those things that it's, you know, yeah, it's money and money's nice, but it was like, okay, that's not a problem. Like it's not a, I certainly wasn't good enough in real estate at the time to cover, you know, those kind of expenses like that. But
so not only was it money, but it was also taking a task off your hands, right?
Yeah, or, it's just like, hey, we're
helping contribute, you know, with a task.
Yeah, it was one of those things that, you know, it's like, hey, you know, okay, we don't have to worry about paying for that. And we were going to have to worry about paying for that. That was a really powerful thing to do, that I was blown away. And it wasn't just them. They just kind of, I don't remember who spearheaded it. It might have been Mike Kemper, or I'm throwing out names, but it was one of those things. And then DPR jumped on it. A bunch of people that he knew and I knew and in the real estate world jumped on that and said, hey, we're going to support you. So it wasn't just, you know, DPR doing that. And I want to say, man, it was, everything is a blur back then. It's so hard to keep, to remember who said what. And, you know, so we appreciate these people, but
yeah,
but I just don't remember who they are for everything. And so it was just one of those things that was just incredibly powerful. And that was something. And then I think one of the things that I realized after the fact, like when I was on the other side, so Corey passed away and then I saw somebody else, let's say somebody else passed away, like, and I would send him a message. I'm like, you don't need a reply to this, but here's, you know, I'm here if you need anything. My brother passed away. One of my closest friends passed away of suicide, whatever. And just say, hey, you know, or maybe it's just, I lost my brother. I lost my little brother and you lost your brother and you lost your sibling. And if you need me, I'm here. I said, you don't need to respond. I know you'll get this. And because you get so many people reaching out.
Yeah.
And I think so many of those people expect you to respond. Now, if somebody needs to be fed, like their closest friends will feed them. They don't need to, they're probably seeing them. They don't need to, you know, if you're a distant friend or an acquaintance, or you see somebody once or twice a year, like you're not going to be the one that brings them food. You could offer and say, if you need anything, let me know. But their closest friends are taking care of them. And yeah, from what I've seen. And so I think that I found a lot of people that were reaching out and I appreciated that. But what I did was, it was like, you know, hey, I'm so sorry. Here's my experience. If it's somewhat relevant, like I'll say, hey, you know, I lost my brother too. Or if they know the situation, I'll say, hey, you know, I went through this. If you need anything, I mean, I reached out to, you know, a Nick, obviously, for, cause it's a very similar,
sure.
I mean, I don't know how similar it is, but they're both our brother. They both,
well, they're both your younger brothers. They were both very successful. They, you know, it was,
yeah.
I mean, you mentioned it wasn't a surprise to you knowing the things that he was struggling with, but it was a shock to the community, right? In both cases, because I mean, as a community, especially in, you know, real estate, we see what is put out there, and what we see is put out there is, you know, success and being the life of the party and being welcomed by all and being, you know,
both of them.
being a contributing factor in the circles that they were in. Yeah. So, you know, it is a shock to everyone else, right? So it is when that thing happens. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, your business at the time. Do you remember kind of what your annual production was at the time when that happened, and then like stock
up. Like nothing.
So, oh, I mean, man. I think it kind of catapulted you, right? Like, I mean, I remember like you were trying to get it together and stuff like that. I mean, we had lots of conversations back then. And then, I mean, it's like you know, all of a sudden you catapulted and started doing a lot more business. And I mean, obviously we've had a couple, you know, these last 2 years have been tough, but talk a little bit about your production back then and what it catapulted to and what ended up pushing you to where you are today and kind of what that looks like and what your business models look like and things like that.
Yeah. It was non-existent. I think I got licensed in May of 15 and I went full time sometime in the third quarter, I think. Maybe the fourth quarter. In that year, in real estate production, I probably sold, $600,000 in real estate. like not even enough to cover expenses. So the next year was probably a little over $1 million. And I remember, I think it was that year, I think it was 2016. And I remember putting together a, like, a, you know, just like, how am I going to do it? And this is one of the things that Keller Williams does really well. I think Keller Williams, I learned it when I was at Keller Williams, but it was, they teach you, okay, how many appointments is it, or how many calls is it, contacts it can take for an appointment? How many appointments for a contract? How many contracts to a close, kind of a thing? And you can figure out, you can get better. You're like, okay, I'm converting, you know, appointments to contract or to listing agreements 50%. Well, I can get better and convert 75% and all that kind of stuff. But I broke that down and I remember looking at it and I was like, man, if I can only sell $4 million a year, look at what we can do. And this is with my girlfriend at the time. And it was my wife now. And I remember sitting down there and she reminds me of things like this because I'm always like future looking. I really don't look to the past very often. I think that the past teaches us things and how to get better and all that thing, but I don't look at the past and go, oh, you know, I wish I would have done this or whatever. And so she reminds me of that. She goes, remember when we were sitting in that dining room that you converted to your office in that apartment in Plano? And we're talking about, what was that number? And I look back and it's 4 million. And I sell far more than 4 million now and have for years. But I remember like how big that number felt and how it was like, how am I going to do this? It's so much business and it's so hard and all of this stuff. And you look back and I'm like, oh wow. Cause I remember the emotion and I remember the fear and I remember it's a stretch goal. It's a really hard goal that I'm going to get to. And now it's like, okay. Like it's not that crazy anymore.
Well, it's really cool that you say that because I think a lot of people get in, right? And they see a big number and they put a big number out there. I want to do 40 yeah. million in production, you know, or something like that, right? They come in and I remember that back in the day when I had a team and I merged the KW Preston Road. And for me, a big number, and I did the math on it, but I was like, I want to do 50 million, right? And this is 2009. I mean, that was a big number. Yeah. I mean, 50 million back then was like doing 150 million today.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. but I didn't really understand how to get there. It was just a big number and it sounded sexy. And it was like, yeah, we can do that, you know? And it was is that mindset of we can do that. And I'm going to push myself to do it. Right. Without, I think having realistic goals, you know, written down that you can actually accomplish it. It's something that is achievable and you accomplish it and then you reset and regrow. So it's cool to hear you say that because $4 million, you know, in production, I mean, obviously for a rookie to do that is amazing, but you know, that's a good number. I mean, and for people out there that don't understand, you know, 3% real estate math on general, that number should be, you know, close to 120,000 a year. Right. So and that's gross, obviously. And then you've got your fees and your expenses and your brokerage on that. Yeah. But anyways, keep going. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I think I'm not going to get hurt by not hitting my goals. And so I typically, and some people will, some people, if they set a goal and they don't hit it, that's really going to bother them and it's going to bother them for a while. And that's problematic because then you can't focus on things that your mind is in another place. Me, on the other hand, I set stupid goals. And, you know, I think it was Brett Caldwell. He's like, you know, I think he told a story once and that I feel like it was him. And it was like, if you plan to climb Mount Everest and you only make it halfway and you make it to base camp, you're still on one of the highest points of most climbers that have ever climbed in the world in all of history. Like base camp of Mount Everest is like 15,000 feet or something like that, or meters, or however you calculate it. And you look at it and that's still one of the highest points in the world. And so you're like, if you set this crazy goal and you get halfway there and you look back and you're like, wow, I'm like top 1% climbers who ever lived. And so I think there's something to say for both of those things. Like if not hitting your goal is going to bother you and that's going to, you know, you're not going to be able to bounce back very quick, then that's problematic. But I like looking at things like, how do I sell 100 million in real estate? Like what would, at least an exercise of what would that take? And do I want that? Like that's the other side of things. Like what would that take? Do I want that? Am I willing to do the work to get to there? Because goals don't matter. Everyone has goals. It's what you do day in and day out and what systems you have in place that's actually, is it going to get you there or not? Where is I going to go with that?
Well, I was going to ask on that. So once you have your number, do you, so the number itself doesn't bother you, but does it, so when you're backing into the, okay, 100 million is this, and this is this many appointments, which means I've got to do this many a month and this much a week. And so that means on a Monday, I've got to call, you know, I've got to go do this. So do you, what part of it does frustrate you? What part of it does, like, man, I didn't do what I was said I was going to do. Is it the activity? Like, how do you kind of push yourself? Because I know you're driven enough to be like, well, Monday didn't go well. Tomorrow's a day, you know, and then so you just kind of happen into success. I know you have enough structure and, you know, stuff going on to where there is a pressure to say, like, look, I told myself I'm going to do this week. I'm going to do this. So what does that look like for you?
So I don't back into it as much as I used to, but what I do is I typically have a few really big kind of contact events per year. And so, for example, right now, everyone's getting their tax protest letter. And so 90% of people have no idea what it means. They look at it, they're like, okay. They don't know the complexity and what they really need to look at. They buy the house 3 years ago, they filed for homestead, and they maybe it got lost, so it's still not on the house. Do they know that they should go back and fight for that and get it put back on the house? Do they know that they should look at comps and look at, you know, all this data to see if they can lower that amount? So I not a stupid amount of time, but it is a lot of time, like for 30 days, which is, we're in that period right now where I am working really hard to add people to my database. And every single one of these people owns a home. And so that's, you know, you look at seller leads are some of the most expensive, difficult leads to get. Well, I add anywhere from 100 to 200 people to my database every year in 30 days, just from this event. And I'll start early in the year and I'll throw out some posts in my neighborhood group or my Facebook group saying, hey, letters are going to start coming and you need to fight this. And you have a very short amount of time that you can do it and you need to do it. If you want me to remind you, send me a DM.
Nice.
And I capture their email, I capture their phone number, and I put them on a reminder list. And then that might be January. And then March, I do the same kind of thing. And so I add people to my database through there. And I reach out to them and I help them figure out what they need to do. Sometimes, you know, a lot of these new people didn't buy with me, but chances are I reached out to them and their agent didn't. And I'm following up with them, having these conversations, and their agent is nowhere to be found.
Do you know the statistic, Jordan, of how many sellers don't use the same agent that they bought the house with?
I feel like it's like 80% or something, right? Is it 70 something?
It probably is. I mean, I know it's pretty consistent. Like if you look up the listing agent, and then you look up the buyer's agent from the previous transaction, they usually are not the same people.
Yeah.
So that's pretty common, you know? So, I mean, most agents drop the ball with that, right? So you're saying about only 20% are the ones that retain that?
I think that's the number. I think the number that has been thrown around for years was like 70-something%. Maybe it's 80-something.
Wow.
But
so basically what you're saying is if you target an area, your neighborhood groups and things like that, I mean, you have a pretty good chance of picking up that business, especially with what you're talking about doing this particular situation. Again, you're creating value, right? You're bringing value because you're basically saying, I'm not asking for anything, but I'm here to help you. Here's something that you may not understand or know, and I could be a valid resource that actually can help get you across this finish line. And if it's something as simple as filing your homestead, I mean, that could be crazy savings.
Oh yeah. I mean, I just this year, I have neighbors that I got, you know, and I don't fight it for them, but I help them with data and I help them understand it because you get those and you have no idea what you're looking at and no one's there to help. And honestly, the county's probably hoping that you don't figure it out because they're going to get more tax money, which that's the game they play. So fair enough. But, and I'm sure my county appraiser, because every document I send, anytime I send comps or data, it has my name on the bottom of it. So out of MLS. So I'm sure my appraiser, which I actually met with them in person, like the actual person that is over my neighborhood. And so I'm sure he sees my name on everything and he's like, oh, this is this guy again. when they have that data, which is fine. He seemed like a very, honest, and he's like, do the right thing kind of person. He's not going to, be negative towards my numbers.
Well,
but
and I think you bring up a good thing regarding that. And just so people understand, I think people have a misconception on how tax appraisals are actually completed, right? And they're people get upset because obviously it's not a full blown appraisal. They're not going in your home. They don't know what's behind the doors. They don't know what's in your backyard. I mean, now with Google Earth and stuff like that, they have a little bit better idea. But those things change, right? Google takes pictures once a year, but it's an accumulation of recent sales that they can get data for in the neighborhood, calculating what the square footage are on the tax rolls. And then, it's basically a combination of recent solds as well as just general appreciation. And that's how these tax calculations happen. It's not somebody specifically usually coming door to door, right, to assess your value. They're doing it from a computer with
it's just a
data
blanket
analysis.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's how they're adjusting value, for your taxes, right? So, it's important to understand that, especially like when you get a homeowner that says, well, I'm on the tax rolls for this, or I want to get this. I want to get at least my tax value. In a lot of cases, I mean, it's funny, back in the years ago, tax assessed values used to be higher than what values were. And then over the last couple of years, tax assessed values have been lower, than what true value is. And then, we've had this blip in the market with high interest rates that have now caused a little bit of friction where somebody just posted something recently, like all my rental properties, for the most part, market value is still higher than tax assessed value. So there's not a lot of options I have, really. I could try, but at the end of the day, it's you're splitting hairs at that point. And another thing to understand is the tax companies out there that help you fight value, what they do is it's an incentive for them to help contest the value of the taxes. And then they take a huge portion of that savings. I forget exactly what that number is. Nick Good was telling me about it recently because he had all of his rental properties assessed. But I want to say it's a pretty big chunk. So if they save you $1,000, right, I think they take out like 50%. So, essentially, the firm that's fighting it for you gets $500 and you save $1,000 with that, because of the amount of work that they're doing. So, anyway, it's just good food for thought. So, it needs to be really worth it to make sense to do something like that.
Well, the other thing that the appraiser told me is that if your homestead value is lower than your market value, and they lower your market value, but it's still above your homestead value, your taxes actually go up. And the reason they go up is because of the way I think you said the county taxes work is it's a discount off of the market value, not off the homestead value.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
So you just got to know what you're doing. And so he said it doesn't matter too much in Collin County, but when you get into Dallas County, Dallas area, it becomes more more impactful. But it's you look at somebody that owns a home, and it's so hard to know what to look for unless you know what to look for. It's like somebody adds a pool. Okay, they're going to add the pool value. Well, what value did they add the pool? Mm-hmm. Like I had one recently, and it was they added a pool in 23, and then they also their house value went up. And they have a homestead and they're like, well, we went up whatever the number was. And it was a lock. And so I looked at it and I broke it down. I'm like, okay, they added 30 grand for the pool, which is reasonable. And then they added 10% from that. I said, so you're right in line with, I tell them, I said, hey, I don't see any data to support a lower number. If I did, I'd send it. And so that's sometimes the answer. But sometimes you look at a property and there's no homestead or there's no, maybe it's somebody named Walter and he doesn't have a 65 plus exemption. And so I might, bring that up. And so
there's not one Walter under 65.
Exactly.
So this is a huge red flag.
Yeah. It's stuff like that, or a veteran, or there's just a lot of stuff out there that, and sometimes it's a very large chunk of money that they could be saving and doing that. And I tell them, and you mentioned that, you know, I'm putting out value and I am, but when I tell them, I said, this is why I do this. I want your email. I want your phone number. I want the opportunity to keep in touch with you. And I want to show you that, imagine how much value you get from me when it's free. And how much, and a lot of times people are learning a lot of stuff. They're like, wow, I didn't know that. I've never heard that before. I'm like, imagine how good it's going to be to work with me when you are ready to sell. And so I'm upfront with that. I tell them, and they're like, oh, because most people are like, oh, I'm capturing your email. I'm going to help you out. And then I'm going to market to you. And I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to market to you. Like, that's what I do. This, I am in sales. And, but I find that my goal is I provide so much value that you look forward to getting my emails. And that's one of the things that I've been focusing on a lot is just my emails. My emails are all, they're done by me. They're, if I don't have anything to good to say that month, I'm not going to send anything.
When you're but proving, like, I think, you're proving you're an expert in the space, right?
Yeah.
And I think, I know we're running out of time, but just to kind of end on a high note, you know, all this controversy and information out there with the NAR lawsuits and all these changes going forward. And I know you're a big advocate for showing value and expertise, you know, and again, anything that gets blown up in the news, goes out to social media, gets misconstrued, and people have a, you know, a horrible, you know, relationship to understanding what agents, you know, really do and the expertise that comes into our field. And, you know, and the truth is there's been some bad apples for sure that give us a bad name. There's been some very terrible people that have gotten their license that have gotten in and don't do the best job.
And that's every industry. Doctors, lawyers, that's teachers, that's police officers. That, I mean, every industry has the shitheads.
Yep.
And so, you know, it's one of those things that, no, there's nothing you can do about it. You know, like you're saying, I try to put out a ton of value, and people, you know, I get messages from people on, you know, my Facebook's public. So you look at my Facebook and see some of the stuff that I write, and I write it. Like, it's all for me. I don't use the, you know, somebody else didn't write my stuff, and it's just I want to give value. If there's something that came up and somebody's like, man, I didn't know that. I'm like, okay, well, that's probably something good to talk about and educate people. And maybe they use me, maybe they don't, but if they don't use me, they're certainly going to be better informed. And when it comes to real estate, you know, being better informed and having the best agent is often worth tens of thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the value. If you have to put a dollar amount to it, it's not like, you know, you're going in and you're buying I'm trying to think of something that you get a deal on it or whatever. Like, if you slip up, if you make a mistake, if you buy the wrong house, like, it's not a few hundred dollars mistake. It is a tens of thousands of dollars mistake.
Yeah.
And that's why if we can, you know, share a little, you know, some good information and some, you know, it's just going to be a whole lot better for people. And, you know, regardless of what's going on in the media is always going to look for the clickbait title. And, you know, it's like, hey, you know, the sky's really green. It's not blue. And they, you know, you're like, what? Like, that's crazy. I always thought it was blue. Maybe I'm colorblind. And it's just bad information out there with whatever is being talked about. And it's obviously real estate I know better than anything else, but it's the same thing with, you know, like, I'm a camera nerd, like, you know, my camera, my audio and all that stuff. Like, I see YouTube videos all the time on people talking about gear that I own and saying how it doesn't work. And I'm like, you have no idea what you're talking about. Like, I don't know why you either don't actually use that device or you have no idea what you're talking about. Cause if you're using it correctly, it's one of the best on the market or whatever it is. And real estate's the same way. I hear people talking about stuff. I'm like, what? Like, that's not right. Like, that's incorrect information. And real estate's also very geographic. So if you're reading articles nationally about real estate and you're like, oh, the market's dropping, it's a buyer's market, buyer can get, you know, huge discounts on homes. Okay, well, welcome to Dallas, because that's not, it's not going to be that way. You know, you're probably looking in Ohio. And so that's the other thing about real estate is you really need somebody that understands the area when it comes to the market and the real estate and buying and selling, all that kind of stuff. And so I approach my social media that I want, what would I want to read? What would I want to learn? What would I want to watch? How would I hire somebody? And that's kind of how I what I do. If it's not something I'd be interested in, then I'm probably not gonna share it, because I want people like me, because the people like us are probably the ones we get along with and work really well together.
Yeah. And if you do it consistently and it's obvious that you're genuine, then you're getting people that are going to be really high quality. When they reach out, they know who they're getting, and you kind of know what you're getting because they followed you long enough. And if you do it another way, you know, we know other people who have a huge following, and they get hit up all the time with people who have zero idea about anything, and they're having to weed through all sorts of random misinformation because they've got people following them for the fact that they, you know, drive a cool car or whatever, have an awesome watch. It's like they're not great clients. But if you have a smaller sort of niche, like these are my people, whenever they reach out, whenever you tell them something, it's like way more valuable. And the more you read, the more you learn, you figure out that's okay. It's not sexy. It doesn't look awesome. Your followers aren't, you know, 4 million. You don't have brand deals. But if you're just in it just to make a living and do the best you can to help people out, it's very doable with the way you're doing it. So I think it's admirable. And so
I appreciate it.
It's been awesome hearing your story. Tavis talked a lot about you, and I kind of knew your background, but knowing some of the details and hearing you talk, we've covered a wide variety of things today. So I really, really appreciate you opening up about your brother and your experience, but it's just real estate. And I think anyone that's in the business, we have a lot of people that listen that are investors and realtors. So we will link your information, but what's the best way for people to get in touch with you and kind of follow along with your journey and your business?
Facebook, I'm probably the most active on. I've YouTube as well. So Facebook, I treat kind of like my CRM, like another CRM. It's people I know, people that I'm connected to. It's a way to engage back and forth through DMs and stuff like that. Facebook's a great one. Just search my name. My personal profile has most of my stuff on it. Instagram, I kind of dabble in, but I don't. But YouTube as well. You can search my name on YouTube and you can kind of get an idea. But I'm kind of revamping my YouTube channel right now. But Facebook's pretty consistent. I write a lot about, you know, just stuff that's going on and things you should think about, stuff like that, that I think's good for, you know, good for real estate or good for owners and buyers.
Yeah. Nice. Well, we'll link all that in the show notes and we'll make sure everyone can get in touch with you. But Jordan, thank you so much for the time today and all the info. And for those of you who have not yet, please like, subscribe, share this episode with a friend. Please get this one out there. This is definitely one that a lot of people should hear and need to hear. There's a lot of great information in it. So if you've never done this before, please share this with someone that you care about and that you want to let them expand what they know about the business, but just from a personal standpoint, I think everyone needs to hear this one. So make a little bit extra effort on this one and try to get it out there. But until next time, have a great day.